Ann Patchett's latest book, This is the Story of a Happy Marriage, is a collection of essays on life, love, and art that adds up to a somewhat unconventional memoir. These pieces provide a window into the life and career of one of our finest contemporary writers, the author of the best-selling novels State of Wonder and Bel Canto, and I'm delighted that this new publication from Harper has brought Ann Patchett back to our show. Hi.
Hi.
Would retrospective be an appropriate term to describe this collection of pieces? Goes back 14 years.
It does. It just brings up such a funny image of me hauling paintings out of the attic and hanging them up, the Patchett retrospective.
Yeah, but when you were putting the collection together, you did the equivalent of that, didn't you? You went through a lot of stuff and said, oh, these are the 14 best ones, or these are the ones most representative of my thinking over the past 14 years?
Well, it's interesting, and I think there are 22 essays in the book, but what I did was put them together, read them through, and then thought, oh, that one's awful. That one's not nearly as good as that one.
Were you tempted to rewrite any?
Oh, I did.
Good idea.
Oh, I threw a ton of them out, and then I started writing new ones so that I could form a kind of narrative arc. And then there were some that I liked the idea, but I didn't like the essay, so I just rewrote them.
I'm almost tempted to call some of them stories, although they are nonfiction. Did you write them with a fiction writer's sense of how to tell a story?
I think I do everything with a fiction writer's. I think I scramble eggs with a fiction writer's sense of how to make breakfast.
But that's even though you began writing for magazines like 17 and Gourmet to support yourself?
Yes. And don't forget Bridal Guide and Mercedes-Benz Living. Yeah, I've written some real junk in my life.
On the other hand, I suspect that you got some value out of those experiences.
Oh, I did. I did. I learned how to become a workhorse. I can do anything. Just give me a topic and I'll go in the other room and write a 1,200-word essay about it.
So is a number of these essays written in that way? Somebody called you and said, we'd love you to contribute to our magazine?
Really, almost all of them. I, in my life, have never once written an essay and then tried to place it. It's always been the other way around, that if somebody has called me and said, would you write an essay for us? And then I write it.
In The Gateway Car, you write, the journey from the head to hand is perilous and lined with bodies. Why do you, that's in talking about why fiction is harder to write than nonfiction.
Because the book that I haven't written, I have one right now. I've got a book in my head. It's brilliant. You just can't believe it. It is the masterwork of our time. But as soon as I write it, I kill it. Now, everything that's gorgeous and three-dimensional and sparkling and brilliant about my idea flattens out on the page.
Is that because you think of better sentences when you're taking a shower than when you actually sit down to write the thing?
No, it's because I'm not thinking in terms of sentences when I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking in full living color and three dimension, but then I have to boil down the vision into sentences, and sentences are ruinous.
And then you say you have to have the ability to forgive oneself. Otherwise, you would never publish anything?
Well, I would probably never write anything. It's that you start to write. We've all had this experience. If you're in seventh grade and you're trying to write a paper for your science class, you've got it in your head. It's great. It's brilliant. You know what you want to do. You sit down and you write it and you think, this is trash. This isn't the wonderful thing that I have to say. But if you can forgive yourself and say, this isn't what I had hoped for, but this is the best I can do.
Do you think that applies to everybody?
Yes.
I mean, Tolstoy was going through the same thing. Proust was going through the same thing.
What do I know? I shouldn't say that, but I do.
They didn't write personal essays.
Well, right. I do think that what we have in our mind just can never, never be as good.
Well, it is a relief to read personal essays where the author admits to not remembering every detail. Do you feel an obligation to be honest with your readers?
Oh, no, Lenny. I feel no obligation.
Well, some people, when they're writing personal essays, there are different schools of thought. Mm-hmm. Some people censor themselves a lot, and others feel that it's really important to say everything, even if it's going to hurt other people.
I tried not to say things that would hurt other people, and I tried to check with the people that I might have hurt so they could read them first. But you know, some people are going to get knocked around along the way. This is a pretty tame collection of essays. And I think the person, hopefully, that I'm hardest on is always myself.
In your introduction to the Best American Short Stories 2006, you begin by saying, the short story is in need of a scandal. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think the essay is probably in need of a scandal even more, which is, how do we get people to read short stories? How do we get people to read essays? You know, the novel always has a big rollout, a red carpet, a lot of pomp and circumstance, and the story just gets lost in the shuffle.
And that's why editors and publishers really push their writers to write novels rather than short stories.
Exactly, exactly.
But could any story ever compare with the scandal in Toronto right now?
I don't know.
Where the mayor is accused of smoking crack, and then he says, yeah, well, he finally admits that he did it, but he did it only because he was totally drunk.
But he didn't inhale. Yeah, I think a short story could live up to that. I think that Alice Munro has given us things greater than the mayor of Toronto smoking crack.
More scandalous?
More scandalous, absolutely.
While you're giving insight into your writing process and the craft itself, you also share some personal anecdotes, like a story of a summer you spent training for the police academy in the hopes of writing a book about it.
I can jump over a 6-foot wall. I got in. I did. My father was a police officer in Los Angeles for 35 years. My father was one of the people who brought in Manson. My father brought in Sirhan the night he shot Bobby Kennedy. And I really was interested in writing a book about why people still wanted to go into the LAPD. I decided to go through the training and write about it. I took all the tests, I got in, and thought, there's no way in the world I can write this book.
Why?
Because my father kept saying, oh, you can't write about that. Anytime something would happen, I would say, well, this is a really interesting story. He would say, well, you can't write about that. Basically, my father wanted me to say that it never rained in Southern California. And I wanted to write a book about my love for him and my respect for his work, but I realized that anything I wrote was not going to work out.
So he was doing that cop thing where we don't air our dirty laundry.
Exactly.
Public.
Also, what I realized halfway through the process is my father didn't want me to write about it. My father wanted me to be a cop. So he wanted me to quit writing and become a police officer and maybe go into the FBI, and that was not my goal.
Talking about forgiving ourselves, I misnamed the mayor of Toronto. He's Rob Ford, not Bob Ford. But do you usually immerse
yourself? I bet he'll get over it. He's got enough to worry about.
Do you usually immerse yourself fully in something before you write about it? After all, did you watch a lot of opera before you created the Roxanne character in Bel Canto? Did you go to the Amazon when you were working on State of Wonder?
I did do all those things, and I really did get a Winnebago and drive it across the American West. But I also feel, as a fiction writer, I could have really just been fine staying home. I have a great life of the mind.
Saul Bellow wrote Henderson the Rain King about a man who goes to Africa, and he was very proud of the fact that he hadn't gone to Africa.
I love Saul Bellow. I just reread Humboldt's Gift. When I was in my 20s, all I did was read Saul Bellow, and I feel like I'm coming back around to that again.
And why do you think writers love Saul Bellow so much better than other readers?
Well, you know, my question is, do people still read Saul Bellow? I mean, I know people are out there reading Updike, they're reading Roth, but Bellow seems so tied to the 70s. It's almost like watching Taxi Driver again.
I stopped reading him after Herzog. Well, I kept reading, but then I didn't like the books as much.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
But Seize the Day is one of my favorite works of fiction.
Did you like Humboldt?
Not as much.
I did love that book.
My guest is Anne Patchett. Her latest book is a collection of essays, personal essays, I guess we would call
these. Quite personal.
This is The Story of a Happy Marriage. It is published by Harper. Before the reader learns about the happy marriage referenced in the title, we first hear about the unhappy marriages in your family.
Yes.
And your own divorce. How did this history affect your relationship with your current husband?
Well, it affected it in that I had decided when I got divorced when I was 25, after a 14-month-long marriage, that I would never marry again. Everyone in my family has divorced. Divorce goes back on both sides for generations. So I thought the way I'm going to beat the system is I'm never, never going to get married again, because I never wanted to get divorced again. And so we dated for 11 years. He wanted to get married. I said, I'll stay with you till I die, but I will not marry you. I lived down the street from him. I just thought it was a great system. We were very, very happy. But then he got sick. It looked like he was going to die. And so I married him very quickly, just got a marriage license, got somebody to sign it, mailed it in, we're married. And then he got better. So now I'm married.
And happiness came as a surprise.
Yeah. You know, I think it was the only circumstance under which I would have gotten married, but it's been really great being married.
Well, a social scientist once told me that the third marriage is usually the best because the first one, you blame the other person. And after the second one, you realize that you are as responsible as the other person. So the third one, you enter with a little more realistic sense of how things work.
I hope in that case that I have another life and I can catch my third marriage in my next life because I'm not up for it in this life.
Could a happy marriage also be used to describe your relationship with your writing?
Really, it could be described.
As troubled as it is sometimes?
Every single thing in this book. It really is a book about the things that I'm married to. Book selling, writing, art, dogs, family. It's about commitment and work and the willingness to say you've got to stick with something for a long time.
You write about the religious controversy at Clemson University over your book Truth and Beauty when it was assigned as a freshman reading assignment. That's the story of your friendship with the wonderful poet and memoirist Lucy Greeley. What was the problem?
Well, Clemson invited me to be the all-freshman read. I do an all-freshman read somewhere, it seems, every year, give the convocation address. And a few weeks before I got there, a man named Ken Wingate decided that the book was pornography and launched a huge campaign to have me kept from the Clemson campus so that the freshmen wouldn't have to read this disgusting piece of trash.
And that's because Lucy Greeley, who had a real problem with cancer of the jaw, turned to drugs and sex as a consolation.
Correct.
Before she finally died of an overdose.
Correct.
A tragic loss because she was such a wonderful writer.
And a wonderful person.
So how do you feel about something that was very personal sparking this kind of public debate?
You know, it was really, I can't even, it's not that I was enraged, I was bewildered in the way that when you're accused of something you didn't do, you just feel bewildered. This wasn't a scandalous book. This was a book that the American Library Association had chosen as the most appropriate book for teenage readers.
Nothing pornographic.
It's a very sweet, loving book about friendship. And so to have all of these people saying, you know, get her off of campus. She's disgusting. We must bar her. We must save our children from her. I just felt confused by the whole thing.
In a piece called Fact Versus Fiction, you write, by telling the story from the story instead of from the actual events, we're able to distance ourselves from our suffering. Do you use your writing to process grief?
I use my writing to process grief and happiness and boredom and joy and love and everything. And that's what I really discovered putting this book together. I had dealt with my whole life by writing it down.
Well, there are a number of other pieces on other people, including your grandmother, your Catholic school teacher named Sister Nina, was it? They're so personal that one wonders whether you wrote about them for yourself or as much for your readers.
Oh, no, I write about everything for myself. I mean,
really?
I really do. I write about it for myself, and then I put it out there. And if somebody wants to publish it, if somebody wants to read it, that's wonderful. But I don't ever sit down and think, what are my readers going to want to hear about?
Well, you also think about other writers, obviously, because you included in this the Bookstore Strikes Back about your opening Parnassus Books in your hometown in Nashville. Have you come full circle from working as a waitress to TGI Fridays and writing on the side to being a best-selling author and owning your own bookstore on the side?
Yeah, it does make me feel sort of like the captain of industry. And the crazy thing is there's so many things about this bookstore I never thought about. But the thing that we sell more than anything are my novels. People actually make pilgrimages. It's like part of their vacation. They come to Nashville and they buy Patchett novels. That I never saw coming.
But, of course, that makes it worthwhile to keep the bookstore
it's
open.
Lovely,
increase,
yeah.
Start a bookstore and increase your book sales.
Absolutely. It's a win-win.
Well, you are obviously also concerned about the decline in bookstores around the country. So many of the big chains have closed up. Barnes & Noble is constantly announcing how much in trouble it is. And But there are these local bookstores that continue to survive. Do you think that that's the future of bookstores?
I think it is. I think it really has so much to do with rent and how many square feet we have and making sure that financially it's viable. The day of the 30,000 square foot bookstore is over.
Are you working on another novel?
I have another novel in my head, and it's brilliant because I haven't started writing it yet.
I'm sure it'll turn out just fine. Ann Patchett will be giving a reading and signing books tonight at 7 o'clock at the Barnes & Noble store, if it's still around.
Oh, it is.
On 86th Street. And then again tomorrow night at 7:30 at Greenlight Bookstore in Fulton Street in Brooklyn. The book we've been discussing, This is the Story of a Happy Marriage, is published by Harper. And as always, it's been a great pleasure talking with Ann Patchett.
It's so good to see you, Lenny. Take care.